Hello, children, and welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am your host, Triforce Pod, and joining me today are two very, very cruel ghouls. Where were you, Will?
I think this is probably the first NEP ever that we actually have on Halloween night, which is kind of an interesting thing. So yes, this is the night of Halloween.
Yeah, I appreciate your Nightmare Before Christmas reference. Was that straight from the soundtrack, or was that Kingdom Hearts?
Oh, I'm surprised you actually noticed. It's actually from the Kingdom Hearts 2 version of it.
That's what I thought. Kingdom Hearts 2 remix. That's what I thought. But I know they always play it really close to it. So I just had to ask. But yes, Nightmare Before Christmas. Great movie, love it. Very, very nicely done. It was a lot better than your last reference, Will, where we had no idea what the heck you were playing. Scrubs, my gosh.
That was very impressive, God, that you picked out. That, you know, you picking out the version of the Halloween song is far more impressive than your introduction, which my reaction was to put my hands on my knees, slowly sit back and mouth, oh my God. But you more than made up for it. You've rallied. We're back on track.
For the record, Kingdom
I can't be held that he wants to go to a Count Dracula accent. That's what he wants to do. I mean, hey, not our fault. I mean, heck, we're just the observers here, but he's the host. So,
dang straight I am. And for the record, Kingdom Hearts is one of my favorite video game franchises, and I loved the Halloween Town levels in both 1 and 2, so that's how I was able to pick it out very easily. And mocking me in the far corner is Tellius Tyler, obviously.
I would like to pitch an idea to you guys as well. Okay. I've talked about this on Twitter. You may have seen it earlier today. Me and
I've
my roommate
busy.
Were Uh-oh. Coming into – we were driving into work, and we realized that there's an untapped market, and that is – Halloween songs. You know, there's like 1,000 Christmas songs, but there's like 4 Halloween songs. So what do you think about a Halloween cover band that only plays the Monster Mash just in different genres of music?
Oh,
are you in?
God.
I would only if I'm lead singer.
You know what? You know what? We happen to have an opening.
Oh, there you go.
Oh God.
Now, apparently, for the record, I was almost in a band previously. It was an all hair metal band, and it was basically me, a science kid with his hair as good as mine, an alpaca,
and a couple
other guys. So, you know, I have band experience, and of course I was in the choir in my school days. Won first place at singing contests multiple times, including a perfect score because, you know, I'm gifted. So
there was no singing requirement for this band. Honestly, I'm just assembling whoever is interested because, listen, this idea prints money. It is the Nintendo Wii of ideas.
It does. And you know what? You know, we're joking about it, but you're kind of right. There
Thank
aren't
you.
A lot of.
I
mean, there's the obvious one of This Is Halloween from
this
of course,
is Halloween.
Nightmare Before Christmas. Monster Mash.
Monster Mash is the best one, yep.
Obviously. I mean, there's Werewolves in London, but that's not really a Halloween song.
No, that does not
song.
Count.
That's
yeah.
not a Halloween
not
song.
Not really. I mean,
yeah, no.
Of course, there's also, like, other, like, pop culture songs.
Oh,
like
Purple People Eater, of course.
Thriller. Thriller's a Halloween song.
Yep, I agree. That was one I had mentioned.
Yeah.
Nightmare on My Street by DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, of course. That one's got to be in there.
Yeah. So, you know, we should, man, we really should. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I got it. This is a missed opportunity for Nintendo. They should have done a Halloween-style song for Luigi's Mansion 3. No, but think about it. They did Jump Up Superstar for Mario Odyssey, and it was Legend. So imagine doing, not like that upbeat, but like a creepy, ghouly theme song for Luigi's Mansion 3. That would have been so cool, potentially.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I can only see that going sideways, but if they did it right...
going sideways.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well... as you can tell, it is indeed Halloween when we are recording this episode, but happy November when you're listening to this, hopefully. So we're going to have a little bit of a fun night tonight, including a very Halloween-themed main event, but of course, we got to start off with what have you been playing? I'll go first because I was the one who had a review up in this past week. I got to say this correctly. I have finally technically beaten Little Town Hero. I know that sounds odd. Let me explain. So I got through the game to the very last boss fight. All right. And as I knew it would be, the last boss fight was very, very, very challenging. And during the boss fight, not unlike certain other RPG boss fights, they give you a break. Okay. Now, I want you guys to think of yourselves as RPG players, all right? You're playing your favorite RPG, Earthbound, Persona, Skies of Arcadia, whatever you want. So you're playing your favorite one. You're on the final boss fight. You slug it out desperately, and you finally get to the second stage of the fight. But they give you a break, and you realize that you can do just about anything during this break. What is the first thing you do?
Save?
Yes! You save the game because you're like, oh, this means it's going to get harder from here. It's going to get much more difficult. I need to save so I don't go all the way back to the beginning. That's what I did. I saved the game after the first stage of the boss fight. I'm pretty sure you can see where this is going. So I get to the second...
You're really not good at the game.
No.
Oh.
That's hurtful. And first of all, you have... No, you're not right at all.
Ah, darn it.
Anyway. You're okay, I'll give you... You are half right with the first word you said. So... I go to the second part of the boss fight. Only to my horror do I find out that everything has not reset like I was thinking that it would be. And so I lose quite terribly. And then I go to the hint section of the game where you, when you lose, and it goes, you know, this boss fight's going to be tough. It's going to break a lot of your thought ideas and everything. And what you should do is, if you're not at this certain health level by the second phase of the game, you should go to the beginning of the boss fight so that you can start over again. Except, if you hit retry, it only takes you to the second stage of the battle, which means you were supposed to not save so you could go to the first stage of the battle if you needed to.
Oh, so basically, like in Pokemon situation, you save right at the gauntlet of the Elite Four. Basically,
Pretty much. And so I literally cannot beat the boss fight, the final boss, with the status that I am in right now. And because I saved, because they gave me the impression that that was what I was supposed to do, I cannot beat the game unless I start all the way back at the beginning, which I refuse to do.
Ouch. Ouch. Ouch.
So you didn't beat it.
Ouch.
That's why I said I technically beat it, because I got to the final boss fight.
No. Wait,
and then I watched a YouTube video for the final cutscene, of which there was only one. So
Just a point of order. Technically beat it would imply that you saw the credits.
Yeah, I did see the credits on the YouTube video that I watched.
Okay, so you didn't beat it.
I did beat it. I did and I didn't. I beat it in spite of the game trying to
screw
me.
You know what? You just tell yourself that you beat it. That's just fine.
I want to tell myself that I beat it, because that's how I feel.
Once you beat the final boss, you either beat the final boss or you don't beat the final boss. If you don't beat the final boss, most people, not all, apparently, but most would say that you didn't beat it.
I will let you form your own opinions, dear viewers, but I'm pretty sure I explained myself clearly that I got screwed out of not being allowed to beat it. So
there's the confession. That's good. We all agree now.
Yeah. So anyway, but not so ironically, this boss fight perfectly encapsulates what I love and hate about Little Town Hero. My review score, as promised, was 3.5 out of 5, so not a 4.5 out of 5, Tyler.
Yeah.
Like you keep accusing me of giving things.
Well, not accusing. I mean, that's to be honest.
We're not going there, Tyler. We're not going there. Anyway, because when this game is fun, it is really fun. The strategy is there. The ideas, they call the Izzets and the Dazzets. I'm not going to explain. They're fun. The story is actually very creative for a very, let's call it, small RPG. And the use of terrain and battles can be fun. But it also can be the most frustrating experience ever. All right, I'm talking like Dark Souls level of frustration, you know? Because either the bosses are incredibly OP, you have to have a perfectly sound strategy that perfectly comes to you at the right moment, have a lot of luck, or hit the, if you remember the going around the village to get help, you have to have the perfect amount of dice luck to land on that perfect villager to help save your sorry butt. And for some people, like I can imagine Will really getting into this game, because I know he likes Dark Souls and, you know, games of that nature. Sorry, Will, no waifus here for you, though. But
you never know. Yeah. You never know. You can always
find him. You can just go back
to
Code Vein.
You never know.
No, trust me, I know. Okay, like they're all kids.
Oh, that's in your eyes. You don't know how powerful Ataka's eyes are. You have
dude,
no idea.
Dude, if you said that any of these girls are waifu, I would be seriously concerned for you in like a way beyond where I'm already at. You're my concern for you.
You have no idea, sir. You have no idea about the
I've
fandom.
Seen your Twitter feed, Will. I know. Anyway, but again, the game can be fun, but like a lot of reviews have stated, including mine, this game lives and dies on its battle system, which isn't something I think is a good thing. I applaud Game Freak for pushing the boundaries, for going big or going home, and for creating a truly unique battle system, and that's awesome. But when I'm like, again, I mentioned this in the last podcast, spending 40 minutes on a single boss fight just to lose and then have to do it all over again, that's frustrating. And if I was any less thin-skinned, I can't remember the correct term here. If I was any more like Tyler, no, I'm kidding, I would rage quit. But I wanted to beat this game, and I felt the desire to beat this game, so I did / didn't / I don't care. But, yeah, play this game at your own risk. I'm actually glad that it was only $25. I would have probably given it a 3 if it was 60, so that actually worked in its favor. But again, it's a fun game, but you have to be willing to push through when it just gets so frustrating, and that happens a lot.
Yeah, I'm not gonna end up picking this up based on
that's fine.
Your review and others. It doesn't sound like it has the quality that it initially seemed it may have. I know that the premise of the game is never leaving the town as well, but I'm surprised that they actually, like, that marketing point actually was true. I sort of expected it to be, like, at the end of the game, it's like, oh, now we're leaving the town and we're, exploring on this grand adventure of some sorts. And not a grand, because, Little Town Hero, it's a small project, but I expected a little more creativity than that.
Well, okay, now, I grant you that, and I was actually expecting the same thing, and I won't spoil the ending for those who might not have played it yet. You are correct in your assumption, though. However, there are a few twists. For example, the little town, it's a lot bigger than you think, all right? And how they twist the story to make it to where you feel like this town is truly alive is actually pretty creative, including this one plot twist that no one saw coming, and I really, really enjoyed it, but I won't spoil that. But yeah, they make the town feel bigger and better than it is, so you don't technically mind not going outside your world. So, but I can understand why you might have that frustration after playing games like, Breath of the Wild or Dragon Quest or, stuff like that, where you're exploring these vast, vast worlds with amazing terrains and everything. So, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, just lightly, I have been playing Fire Emblem again. I missed this game a lot. I am in, I'm at chapter 20. Of the Golden Deer. So, didn't you say there's 21 or 22 chapters, Tyler?
22 chapters.
Excellent. So, I still got two more. I am in the final battle with Edelgard, and I'm doing my best not to kill Dorothea, because I still have feelings. Feelings! But
you didn't recruit her. That's surprising.
Oh, no. I want, for the Golden Deer run, I wanted to not recruit Dorothea, because I had her in my last two runs, between Blue Lion's recruiting specialty, and then her being naturally in Black Eagles. So,
yeah.
I'm trying to change things up a little bit. Keep it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh. Also, Lysithia. Dear gosh, she powerful. She boss. I'm like, I send in one unit. Oh, I could do like 10 damage. I'm like, okay, where's Lysithia? Put her in. Put in Hades. 65 damage. Done.
Yep, pretty much. Yep.
So good. Anyway, so I was hoping, like I have been hoping, to try and beat the game before I play Luigi's Mansion. That probably won't happen now, but whatever. Still fun. Love Fire Emblem. We'll be talking about sales numbers a little bit later on, so looking forward to that. And and Heroes, really quickly, on the recent Legendary banner, I did all colorless so I could try and get a Leaf or Alm, and I got Alm. So
wow,
I was happy.
Lucky.
Well, not really. It was 8%, and I was doing just colorless, so the odds are better, even though obviously we've both been screwed with the RNG gods. But yeah, I was happy I got Alm, and then I got some other character I hadn't gotten before, was it? I don't remember, but I was just happy to get Alm, and so yeah. And then for the voting gauntlet, I just picked a random character for the Halloween. I was just like, I don't like any of these characters. So I just picked a random one, and I'm just gonna, you know, mine it for orbs like a good soldier.
Right.
All right, Tyler, how about you? What have you been playing?
I finished my Blue Lions run the other day.
Yay!
Fire Emblem Three Houses. Yeah, so I almost jumped right back in for the fourth and final run of the Pure Black Eagles run, but I need to mix in some other games into the rotation, because as much fun as I've had playing Fire Emblem for now 250 hours, I definitely am slightly tired of the game, even though I do love it. I think that the Blue Lions is the best route. Now, it was my favorite route. I do like the characters in the Golden Deer more, but it feels like Blue Lions was the one that they put the most heart into. The final battle with Edelgard was like I think it really stood out because at every point along that battle, somebody from the original eight members of your house would speak a line of dialogue about something that was happening on the battlefield, and the presentation of how the battle progressed, it really felt like a true dramatic Fire Emblem climax, whereas I think the other two routes that I did, Golden Deer and Silver Snow, didn't quite capture the epicness, although the soundtrack to the Golden Deer finale is extremely epic. And I loved the ending. As you said, it was very bittersweet, very sad. But Dimitri's arc was complete. He did a great job. I was proud of him at the end of the day. And on Maddening, that map was torture. Because Edelgard, with her stupid bombs that she throws at you the entire map until you enter the throne room, she had a low but there critical chance, and she criticaled my Lysithia with a 5% chance to crit three times.
Wow.
And I had to use Divine Pulse to go back three times to fix that. I actually saw the game over screen because Byleth got hit two times by a 30% bolting, which happened at the very end of the map. I finally cleared everything out. It was just Edelgard. She was actually easy to kill once you got into the main room, but she calls in four reinforcements that have long-ranged spells, and I just didn't have any chance to react to them. They could just, they covered the whole map, so they just said, okay, Byleth, we're going to attack you and kill you, because I didn't know what was coming, and if I had Divine Pulse, I could have gone back, but again, Lysithia got critical three times, so I had to keep going back and saving her. It was a really, really challenging map. The second time through, I kind of knew what was coming, so I was able to handle it much easier, and Ingrid was just phenomenal with her high resistance. But yes, I finally finished that route, and I do think that is my favorite one. It was phenomenal. I love Dimitri. What a great guy.
Yeah, that ending was very cool. And that cutscene, which I won't spoil for Will. I mean, granted, it's going to be another 2 years before he gets to this point.
Yeah.
But I've got to have hope.
No, you know what, Will? Dimitri extends his arm to Edelgard, and she throws the dagger in his shoulder, and then he stabs her in the heart. That's what happens. So there. That's what you get for taking 3 years to beat this game.
Now, do you understand why I said that ending was also a little rushed?
Okay.
Well, there was a lot of things that were rushed, for sure. I felt like the Dimitri and Edelgard, their story was not rushed. I thought that was
no,
really
that
well
was
done.
Fine.
But I do wish we saw a little bit more about what was happening with Edelgard. Like, how did she become that demonic beast? They were just like, preparations are complete. Yeah. And
Rhea.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That was one that was rushed. It was like, Rhea was saved. But see, I didn't feel that as much because I beat the other ones, and then you do know what happened to Rhea. So that didn't affect me as much, but I definitely agree. The order that you play these all really will affect your enjoyment of each one.
Okay,
because there's so much that gets revealed. So I really wasn't worried about Edelgard, or not Edelgard, Rhea, based on I know exactly what's happened to her. But yes, no, I agree with you on that. It definitely.
Now,
it
and
definitely
it's ironic you say that, because I just got done with the Fort Mercius map, where I saw what happened to the fort, which is a reference to what happens in one of the Black Eagles runs. And so I'm like, because remember, I was telling him, like, how did they do this? I don't know. And
right,
now I know.
You know, yeah.
Well, okay,
yeah.
I know in part. I don't know the definitive nature, but I at least got to see it this freaking time in a actually pretty cool cutscene.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I was thrown off by the Death Knight being fought and killed in Fort Mercius in the Blue Lions. Because in the other two that I did, he retreats there in that cutscene that you saw.
Yeah.
And then you fight him again. But, yeah, he was slain tragically in Mercius.
Do we learn it? Is it in Silver Snow that we learn more about him?
No, not really.
I gotta look it up because he says that line in the Blue Lion about in the Blue Lions about Mercedes.
Yes,
and like,
yeah, that's kind of the one thing they kind of clued in regard to the season pass. That's what I'm aware of. They kind of clue that in.
Yes, yeah, he is going to become a playable character.
Joy. All right. So aside from that, anything else, Tyler?
No, that's it. But next week, I'm definitely going to be playing Yooka-Laylee in the Impossible Lair. I'm definitely going to be playing Luigi's Mansion.
I might
mix in Dragon Quest XI-S, so be ready for some fresh answers. But Terry might release for Smash, so maybe don't be so prepared.
Yeah, we'll get to that in the news. Don't worry. All right, Will, how about you?
I'm just going to keep it brief for the most part because, sadly enough, it's kind of been kind of light on my side. For me, I've just been more or less been playing a Fire Emblem Heroes, and yeah, so far Legendary Leaf has been unkind. The only thing I got was another Legendary Azura and Dark Tiki was from what I got from the poll. But yeah, getting Legendary Leaf is RNG Guts has not been kind. So yeah, more or less been grinding up orbs as usual. And regarding to like game style things as well, I mean, I know there's happened a lot of updates, including like, with the Code Vein update of Halloween skins, but yeah, I already finished up the game of release. But I'll probably eventually get to the two different endings just to get my platinum trophies. And something else, it's just kind of been quiet. I mean, yes, I get backlog and all that, but I digress. But for me, I'm just kind of really excited for Death Stranding coming out next week. From Hideo Kojima. I mean, the game itself is like, the trailer's already shown off, like, probably a lot of plot points, but you still have no idea what the heck that is going on. Again, the theme is about making bridges, bringing together America, but again, with Hideo Kojima, you have no idea what he's... Oh, for me, I can't wait to try out Death Stranding that's coming out next week. I mean, with Norman Reedus, Troy Baker, all these great stars. I mean, you don't know that total. I mean, wow. So, for me, I can't wait for next week.
I'm pretty sure Tyler can agree with me on this, but I think that Death Stranding is going to be like the Joker movie, where everyone has their own opinion on what actually went on.
I agree with that, but I also would add the stipulation that Death Stranding is not going to be good. I know, that's a hot take.
Kojima is really up there because again, ever since his time in Konami, like Metal Gear has always been had that stigma as well. Like Metal Gear Solid 3, Metal Gear 2, like there have been times that he has made some interesting and sometimes faulty works, but that's the thing about Kojima. He's like he's almost very similar to Suda 51. He's an archer. He doesn't do it just because for likes. He just do it because he wants to. He's an archer.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, sure. Whatever you say, Will. All right.
No,
so...
I'm serious. He is an arch sure.
Just stop.
Stop.
Stop. All right. So, this week has been a very interesting thing for news. However, today, specifically at the time of this recording, we got a major info dump from Nintendo about the Switch, the games that they've been selling, and many, many other things. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. And we started off with, of course, the recent Nintendo financial briefing numbers for Q2 of 2019. And oh, what a quarter it was. First and foremost, in the quarter of Q2, 4.8 million Switches were sold, including an amount they didn't specify for the Nintendo Switch Lite. So this was the main Switch console and Nintendo Switch Lite combined made 4.8 million in 3 months, which is not bad. And that brings our total to 41.67 million Nintendo Switch units sold worldwide.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it definitely shows that a lot of people just basically want the basic Switch portability, which, again, if you want a fully-fledged portable device Switch, then yeah, the Switch Lite definitely suits your needs. So, again, I've heard that because of the Switch model, it raised their sales by 50%, so... Again, it shows that people are curious. They're definitely curious.
Yeah, we're getting close to Xbox One numbers. They probably will pass them in this holiday, I would imagine.
For Tyler, Pokemon, for sure. Go ahead and look up. I want to know what the Xbox One numbers is right now.
I will look that up.
Now, it's interesting you mention that because the next Nintendo milestone, if you will, is the Super Nintendo, which is 49.1 million. And Nintendo is actually projecting that by the end of December, which of course means the Black Friday and Christmas rush, that they'll reach that mark or at least get close. So, given that they basically sold 5 million in the last quarter without Pokemon and without the holiday rush, I think that's a good estimate.
So at the beginning of this year, Xbox One had 42 million sold.
Dude.
I mean,
if we're being fair, they're probably closer to 50 right now. I think that's a fair estimate.
No, I think that's too generous.
Too generous?
That's considerably too generous, yeah.
45?
Yeah, that's really
45. So, but yeah, the Switch has been doing better year to year and quarter to quarter, so that's pretty good. And Obviously, the big reason that the Switch did so well was because of games that came out in this quarter, including Fire Emblem Three Houses, which is now definitively and epically the best-selling Fire Emblem game in franchise history, with 2.27 million being sold over the first three quarters of, during this quarter, I should say, because it came out in late July, so July, August, September, and I want to hear our thoughts on this because I think we all expected it to maybe be a little more, maybe like closer to three, especially over 3 months. But are we just saying that because we wanted it to do better or because we see all these other numbers and felt maybe that it underperformed, even though this is the best-selling game? What's our thoughts on this?
I thought that it could have done better, honestly, based on the unscientific feeling of just my gut sense talking to people who have Switches who bought this game but hadn't bought previous Fire Emblem games. Yeah. That made me think that the number would be higher. And the initial sales were like astronomical, which I can't remember what the actual numbers were that first or second weekend when we were like, wow, but it was in the millions for sure.
Yeah.
And that to me means the game didn't have as much legs as I kind of assumed that it would. I figured word of mouth would spread. But now that we have the number, it does make sense. Like you said, it's the top-selling Fire Emblem game just a quarter in, so I'm sure it will continue to sell more. And the Fire Emblem fan base was probably fairly rabid for this game. There's probably not a lot of fans who were like, I'm going to wait for it. So that could explain why so many were sold early, and there were so many shortages, and now all the people who wanted it got it, basically.
Right. I mean, speaking as basically the casual Fire Emblem fan here, like, again, I have played with Awakening and with Fates, and again, like, this is the first Fire Emblem console since back on the Wii.
Yep.
Not that call, so, yeah.
Radiant Dawn.
Like, and just, like, again, it had a lot of advertising, it got a lot of press, it got some great things, and it's pretty much a revival of the franchise, and again, like, Fire Emblem Awakening was supposed to be the last one, but now we got this for the home console. It's just like, yeah, it got the press.
Yeah.
It got the press. So for me, I feel like it definitely did well as it did. I mean, you mentioned prior to this, Todd, that that Fire Emblem is technically a bit of a niche genre, but again, a lot of people still love their tactical board games. So yeah, there is a market, but it's sometimes niche. But I feel like Fire Emblem Three Houses actually did pretty well for what it did. I mean, again, first time on back to consoles, so I think it fairly did well, in my opinion.
It's a complicated thing, because first and foremost, we keep hearing about Fire Emblem Heroes and its success, which you know that there's more than 2.27 million people playing this game, right? Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure we said that it's got like over 10 million downloads or something like that, plus. So it's like, well, why aren't those people playing this game? Well, maybe not all of them have Switches, you know, and this Fire Emblem Heroes is free unless you want to pay tribute to the RNG gods. And it wasn't until Heroes, really, that Nintendo decided, hey, this really is a AAA franchise, and we should invest more in it. And the people who really were diehard fans were ones who had been there since the GBA days, or if you were in Japan, the Famicom days with Marth and Shadow Dragon, which was fine. But it wasn't until, you know, Path of Radiance, and then Awakening, definitely. Fates was big, too. And now we... And then... crap, just lost it. Shadows of Valentia was a slightly smaller, but it still had its impact. And then, of course, now we have three houses. So to have two million people buy any game is a big deal. But for Fire Emblem, it's a bigger deal because this is the best in the franchise. And now Nintendo knows, hey, we put the effort into it. We put the time into it. The fans were there for us. And even though I don't think it'll have the legs, as Tyler was saying, of like a Mario Odyssey, Mario Kart, or whatever, I do think people will continue to get this game. And so I would bet maybe by the end of its lifetime, per se, it'd be a little over 3 million. We'll just have to see how many Switches get bought. But still, for what it is and what it was supposed to be, which was this big revolution in the Fire Emblem franchise, which it honestly was, it did good. And again, it could be... Imagine if this game gets Game of the Year. I'm not saying it will. It should be at least be in contention. But imagine if it gets Game of the Year. That'll boost sales through the roof. Even if it gets nominated for something like the Game Awards in December, I think that'll boost sales. Because they'll be like, oh, wait a minute, this Fire Emblem game was the Game of the Year? Maybe we should go and play that. So it's still early enough, I would say. But yeah, I think it did well. And there are game companies who would love for people to buy 2 million lifetime, let alone in like less than 3 months. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like what this proves, like the sale proves, is basically like it shows Nintendo that there is a solid fan base for these kind of games. So I think that's like a good safe assumption that, like, yeah, Nintendo, the sales pretty much prove by themselves, like, there is a market. So if you got extra time on your hands, definitely make another Fire Emblem game sometime down the road, hopefully. So yeah,
so congrats to Intelligent Systems, and thank you, Fire Emblem fan base, you know who you are, for supporting the game and, of course, being a part of the better team with Team Blue Lions. You're welcome.
Oh boy.
They're all good, all right? I honestly didn't think it would turn out that way. That was my fear, was that one would be better than the other, but I loved all the houses. I haven't done Silver Snow, but that's not really a house. But, you know, all the characters are great. All the lords are great. You know, there's only a few duds in the characters. You know, Ash.
Raphael. You know what? I'm standing up for Ash. Ash is a cool guy.
Okay. What about Raphael?
Raphael is a boring character, but he's actually a nice guy.
He's a lovable lug.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he's a lot more fun when he's not in your house, actually. Like, when he's just hanging around the monastery, he's a lot more fun. Like, it's just like, why is there this giant dude just sitting in the cafeteria? Like, didn't we just go fight a battle? Like, he wasn't there. Where is he? Oh, he's sitting in the dining hall. Like, he just did that, and it's funny to me that he's always hanging around.
And in battle, he's pretty tough. He's one of my heavy hitters in my Golden Deer run, so good. He's good in that way, but yeah, he's way too on the nose. All right, moving on to what I felt was one of the bigger surprises of the sales numbers, Link's Awakening, which, to recall, launched on September 20th. In its first 10 days, sold 3.13 million units. Holy cow!
Yeah, that was bonkers. I mean, I totally didn't expect that.
Yeah, to put that in context, and I know it's still, you know, kind of a gap, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe sold 3.1 million in its first 3 days. So it basically did that in just a little bit more time, which is infinitely impressive, because one was a port of a game from the last generation, and one was a port of a game for 26 years ago.
Right.
So, and again, I am happily one of those 3.13 million, and check my review. It's awesome, because of course it is. I'm the host. But I was shocked by this. Now, don't get me wrong. I knew it was going to sell well, because it's Legend of Zelda. Especially, like, modern Legend of Zelda after the success of Breath of the Wild. Anyone was going to buy a Zelda game after Breath of the Wild, which we'll get to those numbers in a bit. But for it to sell over 3 million in 10 days for a 26-year-old port, just reimagined with better graphics and very, very small changes in the mechanics and everything. Very, very small. That's incredible, which proves to me two things. One, Zelda really is eternal. And two, if people haven't had a chance to play a past Zelda game and they get that chance, they're going to play it now.
Yeah. I feel like that's kind of the main factor that kind of was for many people. Like, for if you weren't like one of those fortunate people who actually have a Game Boy Color back in the day, then yeah, this is like the perfect chance to finally experience that classic game all those years ago. I mean, heck, I know, like, Z and like Baby Boomers back in the time, and we grew up with that game, and now with the millennials of this year's is just fun experiencing with it. So it's like, again, they finally experienced the classic stuff that not many people had the fortune enough to experience back then. So I think that probably was a major factor in why a lot of people adapted to this version of the game.
Tyler?
I am so sorry. I was getting texted about my thing. I totally zoomed out.
I was getting a text? Like, yeah?
Listen, my Facebook is compromised and they won't let me log in. And I'm getting texts from people saying, hey, do you need money? And no, I don't. I'm sorry. And I wish I could tell you that I don't. But I'm not going to text every single person.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The question was about why I think Link's Awakening sold well?
Yes.
Okay, I was listening. I was just distracted.
Uh-huh.
The answer is because in a post Breath of the Wild world, the hunger for Legend of Zelda is just through the roof. And I think when you think of the Switch, you think of, actually, for the first time, you think of Zelda before you think of Mario. And I feel that probably a lot of casual fans who have the Switch for Breath of the Wild were like, oh my gosh, this is a new Zelda game. And, you know, Zelda's my favorite game on Switch right now. I'm going to get the next one.
So now that begs the question, could we get, what should be the next step for Nintendo here with the Zelda franchise? We already know that Breath of the Wild 2 is coming. That's unquestionable. Should they do another port, say, of maybe Link to the Past or Oracle of Seasons and Ages, put those two in one game? That'd be an interesting experience. Or should they go full tilt new 2D Legend of Zelda now that they know that the 2D market is still there for the Zelda franchise?
I don't think that... 2D Zelda games will sell well, of course, because they are Zelda games. But I don't think that they allow for quite as much creativity as 3D Zelda games do. And I think that if they were to load up with 2D games... 2D games are... Let me put it this way. 2D Zelda games are a nice curveball. You know, they're the change-up. They're the off-speed stuff. But you got to go to your fastball most of the time. And that's the quality... groundbreaking 3D Zelda game.
Are you saying that the 2D Zelda games aren't astronomical?
Well, yeah. I would say that
we should be more of a focus of a national treasure.
Right. I don't think any of these really work, but I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you're saying that we need a series of games that encapsulates the world?
There it is.
Yeah, metal.
For these baseball puns, join us for... Never mind. Okay. I couldn't resist. You kept doing the baseball lines, like, the curveball, the slider, like, oh, whatever. Look, for me, I think that they could do a brand new 2D Zelda game. Obviously not in the same graphical style of Link's Awakening. Let that be... Or sorry, Link's Awakening, you know, keep that special to that, but do, like, slightly different, you know? Kind of like what they did for Link Between Worlds, you know? Change it up just enough to make it unique, and then see what you can come up with. There is creativity. A Link Between Worlds is a great example of that creativity. But you know, now that they've seen that the 3D games will sell a bajillion, which we'll get to that in a second, and now the 2D games will sell just as well as long as they're quality, people are all in on Zelda in a way that they haven't been for a long time. You know, because Twilight Princess sold way more than Skyward Sword, even though Skyward Sword was hailed as a masterpiece by everyone but Tyler.
Yeah, it's not a very good game. It does not hold up.
I know, it's fine. It's fine. I like Twilight Princess more. Anyway, so I think that the potential is there, but of course they want to make sure that they don't detract from Breath of the Wild 2, but given how long Breath of the Wild 1 took to make, and that more than likely it's going to be like a Skyward Sword that's coming out at the end of the cycle, that still leaves us plenty of time for a brand new Zelda game. So, we'll see. And for those curious about the numbers of Breath of the Wild, it is at 14 million units sold, like 14.37 or something like that. So, yeah, that. So for you thinking, oh, well, Link's Awakening outsell Breath of the Wild, just hold it down there, hotshot. entirely different games, entirely different lifespans, but 3 million in, again, 10 days. So right now, I would bet money that it's as really, really close to 4 million, if not more. So we'll see. And again, then, of course, there's the Christmas, a holiday season, which will probably ratchet up sales for everything. So continuing on with sales, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, 19.04 million, something like that.
Woo!
Again, that still to this day boggles my mind that this is the game that is at the top of the sales charts for the Switch. I mean, don't get me wrong. Mario Kart 8 was a great game, and then Mario Kart 8 Deluxe was it, plus the DLC, which was awesome because I finally got to race as Link. But for it to sell this well, consistently, and to be at the top of the charts, like, consistently for the Nintendo Switch, and basically this means that for every two Switches that are sold, one of them is going to have Mario Kart with it. That's the numbers we're looking at right now, all right? So, yeah, like, try and digest that. I'm pretty sure Sony and Xbox can't pull that off. Dang.
Like, it really is quite something how the Mario Kart franchise always sells well on a Nintendo console. I mean, heck, I still remember, like, Mario Kart Wii back on the Wii. It still was, like, the top seller, even long after its life cycle. And just to see Mario Kart 8 Deluxe selling so highly on the Switch or for the console, it's like, I guess it kind of shows that Mario Kart is universal. Everybody can get into it. It's a racing game. It's, yeah, it's kind of like that basic title, like that basic sports game that's kind of a blend of everything that anybody can get into. It's always kind of an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, I wonder how this is going to impact the next one, because it's just, this one continues to fly off the charts, or to fly off the shelves. You don't want to cut into 8 Deluxe's sales or release like a new one, no. And yet I'm so ready for a new one.
Okay, here's the question, though. So, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe came out 2 months, no wait, like a month and 6 weeks, 6 weeks after the release of the Switch, right? Came out in April, on April 20th, I believe. 2017. So, by next E3, that'll have been over 3 years since the release of the port. Is this the perfect time to announce Mario Kart 9 for, let's say, probably won't be a Pokemon game next year. So let's say November, right before Black Friday sales. Is now the time, if it's ready, if it's ready.
Not to announce it. No, I don't think so. I think it would probably be smart if they let Pokemon kind of fill up the space a little bit, and maybe come a January direct, reveal that as a kind of a centerpiece, maybe of a summer centerpiece.
No, I'm saying that they announce it next year at E3.
Oh, I thought you said that they should announce it in November.
No, they announce it's coming out in November next year. November 2020,
okay.
Before the...
Yeah, yes. Yeah. That would be reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah. Will?
Yeah, I think that's probably, like, the best time now to, like, probably, like, ease up the next entry of the Mario Kart franchise. Like, a lot of people asking one for Double Dash, so who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, I think now is the time. I mean, they've clearly been working on it. They ported 8 to the Switch. There is no way they knew it would explode like this. I mean, again, they didn't think the Switch would sell as well as it has, and now we're at 41 million. So I think they have been working on it. They just been working on making it better, because 8 and 8 Deluxe, honestly, were really great games. So to make 9 even better is got to be a challenge. So hopefully they announce it soon, because that one will sell. I mean, especially now that there's... By the time they get it out, there's going to be at least 50 million, 55 million Switches out there. So I swear there's going to be a big rush to get it. Like that will probably pull Smash Brothers numbers when it comes out because of the popularity of it all.
I think
that would
probably beat Smash Brothers numbers.
Yeah. So we'll see. Fingers crossed, though. All right, quickly going through the next stuff. A surprise in the numbers in that Nintendo Switch Lite is actually selling better in America than it is in Japan. And a lot of people are surprised by this because they felt that the Japanese market would be more inclined for the more mobile, you know, non-docked version of the Switch. But the divide is about 70 to 30 in terms of sales between America and Japan. So a lot of people think that the Switch might actually Switch Lite might actually have a better shelf life because the American market seems to be reacting to it more than the Japanese market. What do you make of this?
It's a tough question. I mean, was it the attachment rate, like, or is it a percentage of the, like? Because I'm not surprised. There's more people in North America, so I'm trying to say
right,
more
right,
people
right,
here.
Right,
so
right.
I'm not surprised that more people would buy it. But I wonder if there was a larger percentage of Switch owners in Japan who bought the Switch Lite. I'm not entirely sure. I wouldn't read too much into it. I can't think of any major reason why that would happen, other than be very obvious there are more people here than there.
Right, right. I feel like that's probably one of the main factors. And I feel like the market in Japan, like, if you're gonna get a Switch, you might as well go with the first round of the big bulky ones. Because, like, if you want to get a Switch, you might as well get the full package. Like, the only reason you want to get a Switch Lite, if you haven't adopted yet, if you just want the basics of full portability, then yeah, like, compared to Japan, I mean, Japan, while it is a heavily mobile market, I feel like they already are invested just to get the basic Switch model. While as in America, like, aside from its more larger population, it feels like a lot of people don't get gaming. A lot of people don't know about it until, like, they see the new model, even at the discounted price point. So I feel like that's probably also a factor as well.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those, you know, oddities that just happens and no one... Like how a game will sell, you know, infinitely better in one region over the other when there's no real clear reason why. Like, you know, a Japanese game will sell great in America despite it, you know, having been there a while. It's one of those weird, like Fire Emblem Awakening. No one really knows why that game sold so well, even with all the quality. It just did. So yeah, but it's still interesting, and it proved that the Switch Lite is a success. So that's important. Now, because of the success of both Fire Emblem on Switch and now Link's Awakening, which was a Game Boy title ported to Switch, a lot of behind the scenes they're saying that there's going to be more 3DS franchises, like the franchises that were truly born and honed on the 3DS, are going to be coming to the Switch in the future, which is great because it means more franchises on the Switch, which means obviously more first-party exclusives, which has been obviously the backbone of the Switch since launch. But are there any 3DS franchises that you can think of that you definitely want to see on Switch get the royal treatment?
I'm kind of biased here, but I want the Persona Q series to come on Switch because I'm sorry. It's just like,
this would probably be
a good opportunity to bring Persona Q or Persona Q 2 into the Switch lineup. I feel like that is a perfect opportunity.
Uh-huh. Dialer?
You know my answer. Kid Icarus would be amazing.
Yes, I think Kid Icarus is definitely one of the higher requested ones. I'm trying to think of ones that... I mean, Golden Sun. I would love Golden Sun to come back, because that's always been a handheld series. And, gosh, I don't know.
That would be cool, but that's not a 3DS. Did they
Yeah, Dark Sun. Okay. Dark Sun, Dark Moon, something like that. No, Dark Moon was 2. Yeah, it was like Dark Sun or something like that. But yeah, it was supposed to be like the revival of the franchise, and then it just...
Right, right.
You know how it
right,
is.
Right.
But yeah, so like that would be a cool one. Definitely Kid Icarus. I can't wait for that to be announced for Switch, but we'll see. But if again, more franchises coming to the Switch, that is just padding its lineup and making sure that, you know, we're getting all the first-party experiences we deserve. So now, before we continue on, I do want to mention one more thing that kind of blows my mind. So I'm looking at the sales numbers of a majority of the big titles, okay? I'm going to give you a number, and I want you to guess which first-party Nintendo game has sold this much. You ready?
Sure.
7.59 million units. Which first-party game sold that much?
Super Mario Party.
Yes.
Okay.
You weren't cheating, were you, Tyler?
No. You can look at my screen. I have nothing on it.
Well, if you had nothing on it, then how are you on this podcast?
I have this podcast screen. I have TeamSpeak 3 on this, but I'm going to get all this.
Yada.
But yeah, can you believe that? I mean, think about where Mario Party has been in the last few years of it being basically a dying, decaying franchise.
The more astonishing thing is that we didn't get DLC for it, given how well it's
Surprisingly.
Yeah. They must be having a Super Mario Party 2 coming out next year. That's my only explanation.
Or this next year or the one after that? Because it came out last year, right?
It did come out last year, but Mario Party games, you can really... You can probably shovel those out.
But it's seriously, it's definitely Nintendo's annual franchise because, like, it is their basic money maker. I mean,
But I that's the thing, though. No, but that's the thing. It hasn't been a moneymaker. It's been dying. Like, people have said that the quality have gone downhill in, like, the last five, six, seven titles. And then for whatever reason, they just go back to basics of Super Mario Party, and all of a sudden it's selling nearly 8 million units. Again, it's one of those unexplainable things. I mean, I'm just looking at the list. It sold more.
Well, you know what? I'm going to try to explain it. I'm going to come in and say, this one was good.
Yeah.
That was a big reason why people bought it. I mean, it was return to form. As you said, they went back to the simpler mechanics, got rid of the car, the mini games were pretty fun. They could have had better boards, but it was a really fun game.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time.
Yeah, sometimes quality is all you need.
Yeah.
All you need is quality. Da-na-na-na. No? Okay, fine. Beatles reference for all you youngins out there. I am so old. All right, I just
Boomer.
Acknowledge that by the time this podcast release, I'll be almost a few days away from 30. I am that old.
Happy almost birthday.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm down to my final month of being 28, so yeah.
Oh, shut up, you youngin.
Wow, happy almost birthday.
You guys know what to do for my birthday, so whatever. All right, moving on to, of course, the thing that we were talking about a little bit earlier, Luigi's Mansion 3.
Ooh.
Yep, the game has officially come out, and I love that Nintendo did it on Halloween, even though they, again, failed by not doing a Luigi's Mansion 3 song in Halloween spirit, but whatever. We're all getting it, or at least me and Tyler are getting it. And the earlier views are that this is a great title. That it's exactly what we wanted, what we expected, that it's better than the originals, or at least number two. I guess the first one's always a debate, because it's what set the tone. But it's a lot of fun, it was worth the wait, and it's no doubt going to be another million seller for Nintendo. So I'm looking forward to playing it tomorrow, and I know Tyler will be playing it like he said earlier. So.
Yes, same here.
Yeah, I was nervous, because I'm like... There are a few games this year that I've been, like, nervous to get the review rating on. The first one was Fire Emblem, without a doubt. And then I'll say Link's Awakening just because I really wanted it to be good so I could finally beat the game, which I did. I definitively beat it, Tyler. I have proof that I beat it, Tyler.
Yeah, no, I believe you beat that one, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just the one that you didn't beat, the final boss, you didn't beat that one. That one you did not beat. That one you came up just a wee bit short on.
Uh-huh. And then a wee... bit short on
right
anyway. Oh, shut up. But then I was worried about Luigi's Mansion because I was really, really hoping, because this franchise is one that really, really deserves the respect of the Nintendo fan world, and Nintendo we should have gotten this game a while ago, but the fact that it came out on Switch actually is better because it'll now sell more, so I'm excited, and I can't wait to play it. It's gonna be funny. Thank you all of you who reviewed it out there, and for all of you who are getting it, thanks for supporting the cause. Now, to a title that Tyler is actually very interested in, possibly for the Switch, I can't say for certain, though. Outer Worlds.
Yes.
So, this game from Obsidian is coming to the Switch in 2020, which is a little later than everybody else, but that's fine. But the twist is that Obsidian actually didn't know that they could actually put it on the Switch and get it to work properly. Which has been a problem for many modern titles. But they said in an interview, I don't remember who came up first with it. It was external to the team. We weren't sure it could be done. But then they started coming out with all these games on Nintendo Switch, and we thought, wow, that's great. And then we saw the proof of concept from the external team who was doing it, and we were very, very surprised. So now this game, Obsidian technically isn't handling the Switch port. It's coming by Virtuos, who was the team who did Dark Souls Remastered, which looked good, Starlink Battle for Atlas, which everyone agrees was the best version of the game, and the LA Noire port. So this is a quality team working on this port. Now whether it actually turns out great, that's still up for debate. But the fact that Obsidian saw something good enough from this external team to make it happen, power to you.
Yeah, I'm sitting tight on this one because I want to play it for sure because I love Fallout New Vegas, and this game got really good reviews, but I have been burned before with bad Switch ports, so I'm going to wait to see the reviews, but I am holding out until it comes to Switch.
Basically, from what I've heard, we're going to, again, what the current PC release right now, it is basically, again, true to form of Fallout New Vegas. It's straight from Obsidian, not bogged down by Bethesda, and like, it's pretty much is what you expect from a solid Fallout game, which is supposed to be, you know, basic in quality. Like, I meant that in a good way, but From what I've seen, Outer Worlds is actually pretty solid. I'm just only wondering about how the port version is going to be for the Switch. So that's the key factor.
Because, you know, like, a great example of this is The Witcher 3. Like, it came to Switch, and it works on Switch, but everyone who plays it acknowledges that there's some big, like, drawbacks that you're probably better for playing on the other systems, which I acknowledge, you know.
That game was a well-done port from everything I saw. I mean,
yes.
If you can't
yes.
play it on another device, it's another one I want to pick up because I haven't played it on any other device, and having it on the go would be great. Actually, they said handheld mode it looks really good in because of the more dense screen.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so we'll see how the Outer Worlds turns out, but hopefully it's good, and hopefully this will encourage Obsidian and other third parties to bring their games to the Switch. We shall see. All right, so in November 1st news, which is, again, when you're potentially listening to this podcast, Terry Bogard may or may not be coming out today/tomorrow at the time of this recording, because there's a whole bunch of rumors going up that state that, and there's proof behind this, that Terry Bogard, the fourth character in the first fighter pack for Smash Bros. Ultimate, will get released on November 1st, because, first off, the spirit board, which, again, has all the spirits of all the other games, are going to have SNK characters, which is where Terry is from, for the first time. So why would they put SNK characters in there if Terry's not in the game yet? And second, there is a private video up on the official Nintendo channel that hasn't been officially released yet. And if you recall, for both Joker and Dragon Quest Hero and Banjo-Kazooie, there have been a special Sakurai plays, let's just call it, in which he breaks down how the character works in the game. So that would work if Nintendo just decides, hey, happy November, here's your Terry. We'll see.
I think it's going to happen. I do.
Me too.
The evidence is very strong, and at the very least, we won't have to wait long.
Like, it's Nintendo has dropped things suddenly, so I wouldn't put it past them to do something like that. But, like, again, who knows? We just have to wait until we have to go through 1 hour of a day of sleep. So, until then, so we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and forgot, on the official Smash Brothers page, Terry's release date used to say November 2019, and now it just says coming soon. So,
it's
take
imminent.
That as you will.
Yeah.
It's imminent.
It is imminent, which also begs the question.
It does beg the question.
When are we going to get that fifth announcement?
I think it's the Game Awards still.
Most likely.
Most likely.
That's gonna feel like such a long wait, because we have been not spoiled. They've handled the releases since Joker well, with the timeline there. So they've done a nice job on keeping them kind of compact. And I would be annoyed if they waited until December to announce the next character, and then it was the end of February he came out. That would be a long wait.
Well, again, that it kind of brings things to full circle. I mean, Joker was revealed at the Video Game Awards, so I'd wrap it up altogether at the Video Game Awards for the first season pass. So I feel like it would just would be poetic in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like for Terry, I think it's likely we'll get him tomorrow. I think that it's a Friday, it's right, and they've done them all over the days. I think they did one on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, you know. They've never been, like, held to the gaming rule of, you know, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Anyway, so I think Terry could come out tomorrow. As for the fifth character, the Game Awards does feel right. However, there is a chance that, much like last year, we'll get another Nintendo Direct in this month, since the last one was in September. And by this month, I mean November, obviously. So I think we could get a Nintendo Direct, and if they don't do it, if they want to wait for the Game Awards, that's fine. Maybe they'll, like, tease us in the Nintendo Direct and say, like, hey, if you want to see the last one, you got to go to the Game Awards. That would be fine enough, because at least we'll have a definitive answer. Or maybe they'll, like, jump. Or how about this? How about they announce the fifth character during the Nintendo Direct, and then during the Game Awards, they'll announce the first character of the next series, because we know they're coming.
Yeah, that would be great.
So that would space it out, because then by that time, if the next character comes in January, then we're already looking forward to, let's say, March, and then they can do the next one at E3. So we'll see. But lots of potential. All right, and to getting close to the end here, Will.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, I was like, yes. Well, I called your name. You need to respond. I am the host. So, Will.
Yeah.
You got S? Faster, Will. You got to work on this, man. Anyway, I'm just going to continue on. You're not listening, clearly. So, we had a very special anniversary recently with the 10th anniversary of Bayonetta.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. It's weird when you think about gaming anniversaries, because usually you hear about, like, you know, Mario is 30 years old, or Zelda is 30 years old, or Metroid is 25 years old, and now you have Bayonetta, who we're still waiting on the third game, and I pray to God that we hear from her at the Game Awards, or the next Nintendo Direct. I won't be shy if that happens, but, or I won't be sad if that happens, sorry. But, you know, we're waiting on that third game. She's very much an iconic character in Smash Brothers, has been in Death Battle. And so now to see here, she's 10 years old, doesn't look it, but, and then the team, like Hideki Kamiya made this really great speech about talking about the games and how the highs and lows and how he was just happy to get it made and how Nintendo came in to help make the second one. And now they're doing the third one for Switch, which we're all excited about. So it was just a really cool moment. And then he made some really cool art for it just to celebrate the 10th year anniversary.
Yes, good stuff. Yes. It's definitely amazing. Like, it's been 10 years since, and again, this is pretty much the creative child baby of, yeah, and ever since he left Capcom and while was in Clover Studios prior.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, first Bayonetta, then Bayonetta 2, just again becoming such a great franchise for Nintendo now, and now Nintendo and Capcom games are so buddy now. It's just, yeah, it's really great. It's really great. So Kamiya, I could only expect how. Can't wait to see any news at all for Bayonetta 3, so I can't wait.
No, really. Kamiya, we need news!
Be careful. Don't demand him too much of anything, because he will block you, like he did to me.
I've been blocked by people more powerful than Kamiya, and I still don't know why, so I feel your pain, Will. I do. Alright, so the final one, I'm going to say it technically isn't Nintendo news, but it feels like.
Is it
Nintendo.
Like it technically isn't like you technically be.
Well,
lost
he's
that
in
you
Smash,
beat.
Technically, so
yeah,
yes.
He's in. This character that we're about to talk about is in,
no,
Smash
don't,
Brothers.
Don't change the subject. Is this technically. Like, could you define. Give me the definition of technically in this situation.
The game that is referenced is on a Nintendo system.
Okay.
But it was not born on a Nintendo system.
Okay.
Okay. So here's what happened. Yesterday on the wrestling program known as All Elite Wrestling, there is a wrestler named Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega is one of the best wrestlers on the planet, but he's also one of the biggest nerds on the planet. He is a basically professional level Street Fighter player. He has won tournaments. He actually portrayed Cody in Street Fighter V in a live action trailer, because that's who he plays as. He has a whole bunch of Nintendo gear. And during certain wrestling entrances, he'll dress up as his favorite anime and video game characters, including but not limited to, he dressed up as Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII one time. He did a couple, I can't remember all the animes he did, but it was pretty cool. And then yesterday, he did this spin-off sequel of Undertale, where they had basically the main monster of the game taunting Kenny Omega to come to the dark side, and Sans comes and helps him out, and then Kenny Omega comes out as Sans, complete with the jacket and the skull mask and everything. It is it is one of the greatest things on God's green earth, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, no, just seeing that, like, the comments in the YouTube section was pretty much matched my reaction. What timeline is this? We're getting video game references and anime references and in popular medias? Like, what timeline is this?
Yeah, and I mean, Kenny is a big Undertale fan. He actually, at one of the biggest wrestling events in Tokyo, Japan, Wrestle Kingdom 13, he came out dressed as Sephiroth, but to Undertale as his background music. Like, full stop. And then he did that basically again, but with Sans this time for AEW Dynamite, which was just so much. And then he did, like, the Sans pose of the shrug and everything. And he did, like, a really dramatic reveal, quote-unquote, of his face. And the internet just exploded. A lot of my friends were like, oh my gosh, he's doing. And there's actually a backstory to why he used Undertale.
Yes,
it's incredibly deep, but. I'll send you the tweets later, Tyler, so you can stop looking confused.
No, I saw the tweets earlier in the day.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not sure that was Nintendo news. I would say
it's. I said it's technically Nintendo. Undertale is on the Switch and it sold really well. And Sans is in Smash
I'm just
Brothers.
Your leg. I'm just pulling your leg. I see why you wanted to point that out, but I would have I would have phrased it more as Sans from Smash Brothers. What he's best known for, his role in Smash Brothers.
Of course. Of course. So, shrug. So, again, thank you, Kenny, for being you. You are one of my heroes, without a doubt. So, with that, we are going to go from the lighthearted news to some scary stories. Hairball. Sorry. I haven't cut my fro yet. So, it is Halloween at the time of this recording, and we decided... Because technically we've never had it on Halloween before, which I'm honestly not surprised because, it's a 7-day schedule thing and whatever. We're going to delve into Nintendo history and talk about our scariest encounters with certain kinds of characters. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a boss fight! I honestly don't remember the last time we did boss fight, kind of makes it even better that we brought it back because we did this. This is like our second episode. I remember we did this, and I know
we did boss fight a long, long time ago.
Long time ago, but so here's how we're gonna do it. It has to be a Nintendo game. Will?
It's actually on a Nintendo system. So yes.
I'll take it.
Oh my gosh.
I'll take it. I'll
Unbelievable.
Take it. I'll take it.
You have one job.
That's my line.
It's on the Nintendo system. I think you would appreciate this one, Tyler.
Okay,
I would appreciate
okay,
this
okay,
one.
Okay, yeah.
Hold on, Tyler.
I'll withhold judgment.
If you're going to do the line, you got to do it with more feeling. You had one job. Go. Come on, say it, Tyler. Feeling.
You had one job.
Better. There we go. There we go.
Thank you. I really brought it there. That was a lot of frustration about this day just coming out right there. I'm sorry, Will. You didn't deserve that.
It's okay. It's okay. Will is our punching bag. If they haven't figured that out after 154 episodes, then what
no,
are they
I
doing
refuse.
Here?
I refuse to.
Please excuse me as your lightning rod of hate.
Did you just quote Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh, I'm surprised you noticed that reference.
That's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Wow. Incredible.
Anyway, why do you think I'm such a great host? Because I know how to improv, obviously. Anyway. By the way, I've got a lot of blue shoes. Anyway. Yeah. So, Tyler.
Yes.
Let your frustration out. Tell us about your scary monster boss fight.
Well, when I was a kid, I was terrified of many, many things. But perhaps the scariest thing was... I'll go specific and then zoom out. The scariest boss, I think, objectively, in Nintendo's catalog is Super Smash Bros. Melee's Giga Bowser. In Adventure Mode specifically, because that is so creepy. So people who haven't played Super Smash Bros. Melee, it's not like an ultimate where Bowser transforms into Giga Bowser. In Melee, there were some rigid requirements to unlock the Giga Bowser boss fight. I think you had to beat Bowser in 30 seconds. But if you did on normal or higher, and if you did, you think you won, your character would do a little celebration, and then some like creepy music would play. And the Bowser trophy that had since plummeted into the abyss would fling back onto the stage, get struck by lightning, and start to glow menacingly as creepy music played. And then Giga Bowser would come and just this gigantic monstrosity of a creature that kind of looks like Bowser, but not really. Just a creature born out of Sakurai's most dark and probably traumatic memories would appear and try to fight you. And growing up, that was horrifying to me, and I rewatched it in preparation for this segment, and I stand by it. That was really creepy. Like, the whole setting, the darkness, part of it's the GameCube because the graphics aren't great, and the trophy looks, like, it looks good, but it does look like, it looks very aggressive. It really does remind you of something out of, like, a Goosebumps kind of story.
Okay.
And yes, Giga Bowser, objectively horrifying, but I would take it a step further and say, Super Smash Bros. Bosses in general are pretty terrifying. Master Hand, super scary. The first time I saw Crazy Hand, that was just horrific. Mm. Like, you're fighting Master Hand, as you normally do. You're finally over your fear of this giant floating hand that laughs creepily as it enters the battlefield. And then in comes another one that's even more just unhinged and menacing and just, yeah, It's terrifying. And I would also add, Gleam and Darkon are kind of creepy as well. They're in different ways. Gleam is like the peaceful, not peaceful. It's like it's like the king in like a fantasy story that appears noble, but then you realize that it's not, and it's just like he's super horrifying because he has this facade about him. That's how Gleam is kind of creepy. Whereas Darkon is just totally, again, that chaotic and unhinged energy that's just shooting tentacles across the screen at you while just dramatic music blares in the background. Sakurai really is not afraid to go dark in the Super Smash Bros. Series.
Yeah, I can definitely see what you mean by that. Like, Giga Bowser, yeah, back when we were growing up, like, that face, that bloodshot eye of his, is like, that thing would really strike fear into people. And,
yes.
Yeah, just like, and the spikes is what really would get me chills. It's just like, you thought Bowser's spike was already scary enough, like, have that extra sharpness to it, like, ugh, it gives you heebie-jeebies.
Yes.
Alright, I can dig
thoughts?
It. I honestly don't remember. I'm going to have to look that up. So what did I look up? Giga Bowser Melee?
Yeah, Giga Bowser appears. Add in appears in Melee.
Giga Bowser appears Melee.
I didn't mention
right.
Taboo either, so I'll improvise.
Oh, Taboo.
Book.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
It's just like just seeing him wipe out all of our favorite heroes in an instant while Master Hand struggles for freedom. Really just super dark, and you wouldn't expect it in Super Smash Bros, but that's where they went with it. Brawl was just a dramatic game in general.
Okay.
Alright, Will, I'm curious, what boss from a title that was on a Nintendo platform were you afraid of?
And you're gonna appreciate this one, so yeah, let me just give you a quick hint.
Oh my gosh.
I don't recognize that sound.
That's King Boom Boo.
Yeah.
Who?
Sonic Adventure 2 Battle.
Oh gosh.
King Boom Boo.
Yeah, he was terrifying. Good answer.
Back when I was a kid, even like when I was growing up with GameCube, like when I first encountered that boss, I don't know, I just froze. I just froze with fear when I heard that thing. Like, granted, the boss fight itself was nothing too complicated. I mean, after that, you had to go run around, basically make laps just to hit his sundial and dig it out of him. But just that laugh of his it just sends chills up my spine. I mean, yeah, you're playing as Knuckles, one of the toughest characters in Sonic Universe. But facing off against that big ghost in a dark tomb in, like, fictional Egypt is, like, I don't know, it just really gets to me for some reason. That laugh, and of course they have that, like, that ominous battle, boss battle music. I mean,
that battle music is great. Yeah, it's blasting in my head right now. The anytime you have a crudely drawn thing, it just ups the creepiness too, because he just kind of looks like it's not a great rendering of a ghost, which just adds to the fear.
Yeah, especially that the thing is is chasing after you with that growl. I mean, yeah, in hindsight, in age, it sounds like bruh. Today's day and age, but back then when I was growing up, and even my best friend had trouble facing off against that boss. He actually called my house just to know how to face this boss. Like, it's so scary. It's like it's so freaky. Like, yeah, that thing stroked fear in me back in once growing up. Like, I played some other games, including with the Twilight Princess, just a brief mention, with the Yeti wife, which just completely goes exorcist on you.
Oh, that's a good one.
That was a brief mentioning. That one's a pretty scary one. But yeah, but King Boom Boo is it's just no words to describe. It's just, it's creepy, it's crude, it's just the fact it's chasing you in a dark tomb is like, that's kind of like that horror movie material right there. I'm sorry, it's really scary.
All right. I can't speak to him because I never played Sonic Adventure 2.
I'm serious. You are relieved of your duties as the host.
Hold on.
Relieved by a vote of 2-1.
Okay, first of all, I was never a big Sonic fan. I think in my life, I have honestly played... Okay, let me think. All right, I had a babysitter who had the original Sonic on a Sega Genesis. Okay. I played Sonic Battle on Game Boy Advance, which is a great title. I had Sonic Heroes for GameCube.
Great title.
I rented the hoverboard title.
Sonic Riders.
Sonic Riders.
Underrated gem, Sonic Riders.
It wasn't
really
bad.
Underrated.
I enjoyed it. I got Lost World for the DS, which I enjoyed.
It was 3DS.
I apologize. Yes, 3DS. And you know, it was fine. I liked it. You know, a few graphical issues, but the gameplay was solid. I feel like I'm missing one. I don't know, but like,
that's your homework is to go back. It's up to Nintendo to make them available on Switch, but you got to play the adventure games.
Okay.
And of course the originals and Mania. Just play Mania. Mania, I would like to play.
I've heard Mania is really good.
Mania is amazing.
All right, but okay. So for me, my boss fight. I'm sure you're probably gonna laugh, but I need to have a little bit of context. And the context is this. I hate spiders.
Okay.
So imagine my fear in both Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask when I find out there is a dangly spider monster called Skulltula.
Oh.
And that thing loves to just drop down from the sky and surprise you with its impenetrable path of skulliness. All right. So especially in the Deku Tree level, which is, again, like the first level of Ocarina of Time, you know, that's your job, is to get through all of these dumb spiders just so you can advance. And I got freaked every time I saw a Skulltula. I mean, first of all, it's just a creepy design. A spider with a skull on its back, an evil skull, no less. Like, that was just terrifying. But then I found out, oh, that's not the last spider monster. Oh no, there's Goma.
Okay.
Spider. I hate that thing. I still get chills when I think about it because I hate spiders. So when I see a giant spider monster with that one big eye that rolls on its own head and just stares at me, I'm going to poke that thing out. Kidding me? Like, this is almost like stress relief as I am in maximum stress mode. Okay. And then Goma just kept coming back. He's had like multiple forms over the games. Wasn't he in Breath of the Wild too? Or I think, wasn't he?
Don't think so.
No, that wasn't it. Was it? Okay, he was in a couple other ones because he was that poppy. He's had many forms over the years, and so just the idea of a giant spider monster waiting for me in a Zelda game is enough to get my hair standing on end, which, if you know my hair, it's actually pretty impressive. So it probably adds another 2 inches to my height if it's on end. But what? It'd be awesome. It'd be 6'5" then. But you know, just he's definitely not the scariest Zelda monster in context. Like, if we're going for like pure fear, I might put Zant.
We left Zant. We didn't say Zant. I was thinking about using him, but I didn't go in that direction. I kind of thought Todd was going to use Zant,
well,
so I didn't want to
say
that.
I'll use Zant as an example of a more pure horror, where Goma is primal horror because I'm scared of spiders.
Right.
Zant is pure horror because the way he carried himself, the way he moved, the way he screamed, neck snapping things like he would do, that's pure horror. And so I would definitely say Zant is definitely up there for like scary. But if we're talking like one that scared me the most when I was playing the game, it's Goma and the Skulltulas because I hate spiders.
Oh, all right. And yeah, like, I could definitely like see a lot of like very scary bosses and monsters in the Legend of Zelda series in general. I mean, I can also still remember, as I like mentioned before, like, Betty's wife in Twilight Princess. Twilight Princess was actually pretty darn scary now I think about it in context.
Yeah.
Zant is definitely one of the more like insane crazy. Wow, and I don't know, even like just like the, again, the fact that the citizens of the Twilight Realm has blank eyes is like,
Or how about, if you want to talk about like super scary moments, how about the time that Zant tricked the light spirit to almost killing Midna, and you're like seeing her basically dissolve into light, and I'm like, no! Don't kill Midna, that's one of my waifus. So, yeah, like, Nintendo, or in Twilight Princess, how about the scene where we see like the kids raining out of the sky in Link's like vision nightmare thing, and they're all like plastic dolls basically. Remember that scene?
Oh yeah, that's not
that's scary.
I think
Marks is kind of creepy too. Kirby has some creepy bosses.
Marks, oh my gosh, Marks in Ultimate, yeah. That was scary.
Yeah,
I'm like, who the heck are you? And it's like Marks, and I'm like, oh, this guy is. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also I like that you mentioned Taboo, Tyler. Taboo was, you know, he's a kind of evil that you can't really define because he looks scary, then he's uberly powerful, and you just want him to die so badly.
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
Why does it take 5 characters for me to beat this guy? Boom! Oh, that's
to Sonic the Hedgehog. Without Sonic, they would never have a chance.
Yep. He had to wait to the last moment to make his appearance, though.
It's just kind of development team's fault.
It's definitely kind of weird how Sakurai, especially he makes the Kirby series, like, yeah, as you know, Kirby is like pretty light and fluffy, but surprised you was like very scary monsters, like Melphigor, like the one in that on Star Adventures. I forgot. Monsters is just really, yeah. He there's like so fluffy at the same time. He can put some really disturbing monsters in the game.
I was thinking Kid Icarus. I was trying to come up with a good creepy Kid Icarus boss, and there's really not one, which is odd because Sakurai does have a bunch of.
I mean, I guess.
Bosses.
I mean, if we want to go, you can go like in Uprising. Hades was kind of scary.
He wasn't really. What? He was comedic. He was pretty funny.
Yes. Yeah. He was more comedic. He's more snarky.
Like fighting Pit's like husk of a body as Magnus was kind of weird. And Palutena, of course, possessed Palutena was also fairly weird. But not horrifying or anything. That's okay. So their pseudo Palutena, the monster version of Palutena.
Oh,
true.
That you fight. That's probably the creepiest boss in that game.
Oh, and we forgot about a certain monster named Ridley.
Yeah, Ridley's a good answer.
Ridley's terrifying, especially like when he just keeps coming back. The dude
died. He's basically a Terminator. Yeah, basically Terminator.
And let's not forget that this is the guy / entity who destroyed all of Samus's family and killed her planet, basically. Like, the manga version of Ridley is terrifying get out. He could talk in the manga version for reasons. So, try and wrap your head around that one. But, Nintendo has a reputation for being, like, you know, the family-friendly thing, but then you get games like Twilight Princess or, you know, certain sort of like Sonic Adventures at times.
Yeah, Metroid Prime 2. Yeah,
Metroid. Oh yeah, the dark world. That was very creepy and scary.
One more low hanging fruit that we didn't mention that I thought Todd was going to use for sure. The Shadow Princess, Shadow Queen from Paper Mario.
I was thinking about it, but I wouldn't. I don't know if I would call her scary. It was creepy. Her power
she
level.
She possesses Princess Peach.
I was getting to that, and the fact that she possesses Peach is a big, you know,
and
scary
and she has the hands
moment.
That come up. She's kind of
disturbing.
Paper Mario. What about Mimi from Super Paper Mario, a game that Will mentioned last episode? When she twists her head and then she becomes that giant spider monster. Speaking of spiders.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's been a while since I played Super Paper Mario, so forgive me on that one if I forgot.
Yeah.
But or you know, and even just can stick with that game, Count Black.
Yeah,
like
he is kind of disturbing in a way.
He was like his origin story. He basically reveals that he killed his dad, and that's how he became Count Black was because of his laugh. Like that's disturbing.
Yeah, that is. What's the jester's name? Is the real bad guy? It's not Mysterio.
No. Yeah,
it's from Spider-Man, but he's kind of weird too. He was just like super evil.
Yeah, see, Nintendo knows how to do scary at times. They don't show it all the time because they don't want to be known as the scary platform. But they know how to bring the terror. They know how to.
True
how to
that.
Do it.
True that.
Dementio.
I mean, heck.
Dementio.
Yes, Dementio. Yes. Dementio. Right. Oh. Of course, like actually, of course, the classic one with Luigi. I mean, again, King Boo is a basic ghost, but I'm saying that he also carries that sense of natural scariness. So, I mean,
yes,
with the
great point, Luigi. Well.
Oh, and we forgot about the biggest horror game in all of Nintendo's library. Sticker Star.
Yeah.
The stickers, they're everywhere. I hate that game so much. I had such a... I was like, oh, it's a new Paper Mario game. Oh, it's on the 3DS. That's awesome. Oh, this sucks. That's pretty much my reaction to it. It's like, oh, gosh. Okay, how about let's end it on this. Pick a franchise where you'd like to see scary monsters next. Any franchise. Doesn't matter if there's a game working on it or not. Pick one that you would like to see a super scary monster in, at least in one level.
Breath of the Wild 2, absolutely. I hope that they up the horror there.
Right. I feel like, Breath of the Wild 2 seems like prime spotting for horror. Like, if they kind of, like, take some influence from Majora's Mask, I feel like, yes.
I'll go with the next 3D Mario game, because I would love to see them do, like, a Luigi's Mansion spin-off level. But obviously, like, he could be, like, saving Luigi in the mansion for once, which would be hilarious enough. But then they just, like, go all out on, like, the ghost monster that Mario has to beat. Because, you know, Mario's games are fun, but they're rarely ever scary. I mean, even Bowser has lost a lot of his, you know, fear factor. I mean, he would turn into a cat. I mean, that's terrifying.
But I find
him in a wedding suit. Why should I be scared of a man in a wedding suit? I don't care that his hat has boxing gloves.
Might I point out regarding to Super Mario 64 and the haunted house? Because when you feed that eye and that chomping piano, point out that?
Okay, but that's been That was a while ago. So Mario's due for a scare that isn't involving him getting turned into a painting again. So we'll see. What about you, Will? What franchise would you like to see some more scary monsters turn up?
I kind of piggyback. We're going to Breath of the Wild 2 already, but
oh, that's right. Sorry.
Like, if I had to choose something else differently, like, yeah. I can probably only imagine. Like Mario, Zelda, I mean, Metroid's pretty much already done already, because go to this whole alien primordial creatures. It's almost being Cthulhu, like franchise. I mean, heck, I'd be surprised if they continue that with Pokemon. I mean, Pokemon's always been famed with its ghosts and all things. Whatever's still surprisingly dark subject matter, so maybe Pokemon, perhaps?
Now, the anime has done some very scary episodes, let me tell you. I mean, they've done a couple Haunted Mansion episodes, and there was one where they actually get eaten by ghosts, technically. Yes, Tyler, technically. It's an anime. What do you want from me? But, you know...
No, technically as in... You beat the game,
Stop! Stop it! I am the host, dang it! Stop making fun of me! Anyway, but yeah, Pokemon would be interesting. Actually, going back to Metroid, Metroid Fusion, the X monster, the Samus X, remember? The dark clone, the other clone of Samus. That was scary, because it's like, it's a better version of you, so how are you supposed to beat it? So, that was pretty cool. There's been a lot of scary monsters out there in the Nintendo universe, ladies and gentlemen. And for our non-poll question of the week, I suggest we ask our viewers, what are some of your favorite scary boss fights in Nintendo history? How about that, Tyler?
Perfect. Love it.
Did we get any responses from
We did. Last week we asked what you think makes a game replayable, and one of our favorite listeners, Christian Howe, wrote back, lots of good side quests. And graphics and music were among the points he mentioned, and I agree on all accounts, especially the graphics and music. Yoshi's Island sprang to mind for me. I've replayed that game a ton, and it's largely because the art style is so great that I can go back to that at any point. I always love how that game looks.
Yeah, music is always important. Sometimes the best games are punctuated by the amazing music that is being played in the backgrounds. So, yeah. All right, so as you said, our non-poll question this week is, what are some of your favorite scary boss fights from Nintendo history? And yes, for people like Will, there can be ones for games that were on a Nintendo system and not exclusive to a Nintendo system. You freaking cop-outs.
I don't think Adventure Battle 2 was, like, anything else. Was it, Tyler? Please correct me.
Sonic Adventure 2, it started on the Dreamcast, and then...
Yeah,
it was a remake. Right, okay.
Know your history, Will. Know your history. And, of course, let us know what you think of all the recent Nintendo news. What are your favorite Bayonetta memories from the first two games? Or Smash Brothers, or Death Battle, whatever you prefer. What do you think of all the Nintendo sales numbers news? Were you one of the people who got Link's Awakening, or Fire Emblem? Or are you one of the 7.58 million who got Super Mario Party? Are you one of the 41 million Switch owners? I would hope so if you're listening to this podcast, but I won't judge. Okay, yeah, I will. I'm the host. So let us know in the comments below, and be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. So for Tellius Tyler and Wario Will. I am Triforce Todd, and ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time, but we are not out of lives. You have made it to the scary level. Raise the flag.